Welcome back to The Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation, where we explore key issues and compelling stories in the trucking industry. I'm your host, Dayton Rumbold, and you're listening to episode 124, Top Issues in Trucking, Maintaining Profitability. How do you make it as a trucking company? Today, business analytics manager Zach Hildebrandt joins me in the studio to talk about how Nussbaum stays sales savvy in addition to being purpose-driven. You're not going to want to miss this featured exchange. Welcome back to the Terminal Exchange. I got Zach, my friend, Zach Hildebrandt.
Hello.
Zach Hildebeast, as some call him.
So, I've heard that a time or two.
Yeah, well, you know, Hildebeast is a great name, and we're excited to do this, and we're making this a series, the Pain Point series, Pain Points in Trucking. Zach works in the business analytics department. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So business analytics manager is your title.
Right.
And so we'll talk a little bit about who you are, how you got the Nussbaum, mm-hmm. and some of the highlights of your life.
Sounds great.
Okay. Cool. So just to start, outside of work, what do you like to do?
I like to stare blankly out the window, contemplate life.
Until the next time you come back in.
Until I come back to work, I just, wife and kids are like, he's here, but he's absent.
Yeah, everything just pauses.
It all goes black and white, too.
Yeah.
No,
And scene.
Yeah, right, and that's it. No, I have a fair number of interests. I like sports. There's a group of us here who play basketball every Friday morning at 5 a.m. if you're into early morning basketball.
It's crazy.
Midwest Food Bank. Yeah, you participated.
I did
you were
once.
There. You were there not a couple weeks ago. I couldn't make it because literally my entire household was sick. But
yeah, it is crazy. Okay. I did it once. 5 a.m. comes a little quick.
So. It sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm big into sports, like watching football on Sunday, like playing whatever, you know, my body will allow me to play, which is less and less these days. Mm-hmm. Games, video games, board games. Just enjoy being outside, done a lot of outdoor stuff with my wife and family over the years, and look forward to doing that more. And I'm kind of a personal finance nerd. Numbers. I like investing. I'm not like a day trader or anything. I'm not going to tell you what the latest stock is.
Buy, sell.
The only non-financial advice I would have for anybody is always be buying and keep it simple. Like, I'm not buying individual stocks like most of my stuff right now. It's just like, here's an index that seems good.
Always be buying stocks?
Yeah.
Or always be buying something?
Probably both. Probably. But the quality of the something matters. But if you're investing, it's important to be high quality. Generally an S&P 500 index, right? Yeah. So you're just buying the stock market, returns 10% roughly every decade.
Yeah.
You know, on an annual basis, it's like quality, just make it automatic. Mm-hmm. If you can make it automatic, you're going to be set up well.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good advice. So how did you get the Nussbaum? What brought you here?
Yeah, that's a pretty, I don't know if it's an interesting story, but it's a story. Mm-hmm. So I was working as an account manager, not going to name the company, just because my experience wasn't great. Learned a lot. I was an account manager. I'd been at this company for about a year and a half up in the suburbs. Mental health wasn't doing too hot. I was just really struggling. Anxiety, depression, both had been issues for me for a long time, and it was just really getting triggered with this role. Too much responsibility, not enough time. And Lindsay Staff, she and my wife have been friends since college, and Lindsay's husband and I have been friends also since college. She let my wife Alyssa know, like, hey, there's an account manager role, like same title as what your husband, you know, is what Zach has now. Like, maybe he'd be interested in working here. And I was like, trucking? My mom did and stepdad have been in trucking for like 30 years. I don't know that I want any part of that. Yeah. But put in for it, was really impressed. When I drove in for my interview, I was like expecting to drive with a sheet metal, like external building. I was like looking to drive to the shop.
Oh no.
I followed my GPS like a good millennial, and I pulled into the actual office building. I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like,
Doesn't look like a trucking company.
Yeah, I thought I was at the I thought I was in the wrong at the wrong place, but it went well. I got offered the job on a Friday. Had prayed about it a lot and talked to my wife about it quite a bit and turned it down.
Oh, really?
Yeah, turned it down. It was
I don't know if I've heard this.
Yeah, I was driving home from my current job on a Friday afternoon. Turned Jeremy down, and I think he's still crushed. If you ever hear him bring his office, he's probably still reliving that day. Very traumatic. And I got home and told Alyssa what, you know, I turned it down. She's like, oh, you did? Okay. And I was like, okay, did we make the wrong decision? Like, so we doubled down and spent the weekend basically wrestling with that and kind of came to the conclusion, like, okay, this wasn't the right call. So I called back on a Monday, the next Monday, and I was like, hey, I know this is unorthodox, but is there any chance that I can be put back in the running for this role? And Jeremy graciously agreed to let me back in on it, and ended up getting the job as an account manager on operations. Did that for a couple of years, and then there was an opening for a pricing analyst, is what we used to be called.
Okay.
And got that role, working with Tyler and Dylan over there, and the team's evolved and changed quite a bit, but been in an analyst seat for about 3 years now, and it's been a really good decision. Like, the transition for the family was filled with its own challenges, but for me professionally, it's a no doubter. It's been a really good move.
Yeah, and probably a little bit less stressful than your previous job.
Way less so. Yeah. I enjoy what I do. I'm able to be challenged constantly, but in a way that, like, makes sense.
Yeah.
And I can grow professionally and work with a team. It was too much solo for me before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, having some other people to rely on for that, working together in a team is an
you can
awesome
turn the
thing.
Chair, like, we just turn the chairs around, like, hey, I got a question. All right, let's collaborate. Boom. All right, I got something.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it's like, I have a question. Oh, boss is too busy to answer. All these other, managers, they have their own stuff. Like, my team is me. And then a sales guy who's out traveling across the country, and maybe like an account specialist who's, I had a new account, a brand new person. It's like, just tell me what to do. You have a great attitude, but I have no one to turn to for answers.
Yeah.
So very different atmosphere for sure.
That's cool. I never heard that before. You said no at first and then decided to reconsider.
Then I came crawling back.
Jeremy, please.
Please have mercy.
Have mercy. What was the funnest or most fun, like, most fun would be Grammarly correct,
day it's of your the life. Most funnerest,
most
I think
funnerest.
Is what you're looking for. I have a degree in English studies, so you can trust me.
I think that's what I remember that, so I tried to
oh
throw
is that,
that
why
in
that's
there.
In there that makes
yeah,
so much sense.
Grammar
I laughed
guy.
When I read your initial
yeah
no that's great,
it's good. So just a general icebreaker question, what was the most fun day of your life?
When I think about it, I don't reflect often enough. And I think the one, it might sound like, or some, even feel like a little bit of a cop-out answer, but it's true. My wedding day, it was awesome. I don't get, well, that's actually not true. I don't get brought to tears often. I'm kind of a bit of an emotional guy. But seeing Alyssa in her wedding dress, like, she and I shared our first kiss after they said, you know, yeah, you kissed the bride. I was like, sweet. Because we had dated for 2 years, we're engaged for about 4 or 5 months. I mean, marrying the love of my life, surrounded by family and friends. The day was such a blur, but it like snowed the night before. I didn't know this. I was busy hanging out with my buddies. But Alyssa apparently was freaking out about it. She's like, oh no, we have an outdoor wedding in May. Like, what were we thinking? And then it ended up being like partly cloudy and 70, and it was about perfect. I mean, the day was perfect. The location was awesome. It was just the park where we went to church. So it was like nothing particularly special about, like, amazing about the place. It wasn't, you know, anything on anyone's radar, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun, but I mean, there's some other.
So it snowed in May?
It snowed, yeah. So our wedding was on the 18th, and it snowed the night of the 17th, apparently. So mid-May. I mean, it was like a dusting. It wasn't anything crazy. I don't think any of it stuck. But Yeah, I mean, but we've done some other stuff like backpacking trips in Michigan. We've done a couple of those. When the Cubs won the World Series, that was kind of amazing because it had been like 108 years or something since they had done that. Lots of family trips since the kids came around. And I would put my kids, like the day of my kids being born is like fun days, but I don't think fun's the right word. I'd say it's, I heard Daniel breathe in over there. I'd say probably more stressful and more awe-inspiring. Like, holy smokes. Like, I just got to be a part. Like, well, I was a more passive participant, but I was there. I was an encourager.
Yeah.
But that was cool. And I, you know, it's hard for me to think of life in terms of days. Think more of it, like, in terms of moments. Mm-hmm. Like, there have been some really good moments. My wife and I went ice skating on our first, like, actual date as a dating couple. Mm-hmm. That was fun. That one sticks out to me. Mm-hmm. My 5-year-old likes to make books. He like stacks a bunch of papers. We'll staple them together and draw, and then he'll ask me or my wife to write the words in, and it's just hilarious what he comes up with. My 3-year-old likes to shoot hoops with me, so he'll be like, "Dad, you wanna shoot?" I'm like, how can you say no? So he'll like bring out a step ladder. I'll lower our basketball hoop as low as it can go, and he'll like shoot baskets from the step ladder. And then recently, my 11-month-old daughter. So one day she was like freaking out because she had me, and I'm not mom. Mm-hmm. So I put on a song that's called "Where Is the Cake?" It's one of my kids' like CD playlist things, and she likes it because it just goes la 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 for a bunch of it, and she'll like stick her tongue out and try and do it. And I was holding her, grabbed her arm, started dancing with her, and she calmed down, was kind of looking at me all confused, and she kind of got into it. Well, that song was on again like a week later, and she was like wandering around the house. I was doing dishes. She came and found me and like stuck her hands up.
Aww.
I was like, sure. So I picked her up, and then she like held her arm out, like wanting me to like hold it and dance with her.
Oh, wow.
So that one got me.
That really sticks out.
Yeah. So, yeah, it can be hard to pick like the most fun day, but I can think of a lot of really touching, like really fun moments.
Yeah.
Like maybe the day is whatever, but this one snapshot in time is incredible.
Moments mean a lot. You talked about investing, buying stuff, and it's like at the end of the day, the best thing you can invest in is those moments and times together with family and friends. Today, we're going to focus in on the characteristic of inconsistency with rates and the way company does stuff. So this is another company working with Nussbaum. How do they rate Nussbaum and how we're doing? Some of those other ones were internal, so a driver working for a company. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to focus on, since this is your job, is making things work, coming up with the prices, setting doing bids, correct? Or am I understanding that correctly?
You are.
Okay. So a great example is 2 weeks ago in orientation, we had someone come in who is here because their company went bankrupt. There was no longer a company there. So at the end of the day, I wanted to talk about how do we not go bankrupt? How do we stay around as a company? Nussbaum's great culture, but at the end of the day, we have to be being profitable. So just to start, if you want to give us a sneak peek into what is a day in the life of a business analytics manager look like, what do you do day to day? How do you come in? What's your job look like?
Yeah. And I'd say it depends on the day. One of our primary functions, probably the primary function, is we price the freight. Right, we work in partnership with, we work very closely with our business development team. So the sales team, they're out there developing contacts, reaching out to customers, maintaining relationships with the current shipper partners, and trying to generate new relationships. But we're the ones who are pricing the freight, analyzing the freight. So that's number one. You got to be good at the fundamentals. Recognizing the market, pricing the freight well so you're not going bankrupt, right? You got to operate above your cost or make more than you're spending.
For sure.
But pricing is the biggest piece. Collaboration with our sales folks, operations team, because they're the ones who are actually managing the freight day to day, and working with our drivers, recruiting if there's something dedicated, billing if there's special billing requirements. So we're constant communication. We don't have any external, like, operations is working with the driver and then with the shippers and the mm-hmm. folks in their operations. Sales is working with the customer. We're all internal. Mm. Like, we have no external responsibility, so we have to be excellent at building and maintaining our relationships within mm-hmm. the company.
Yeah.
So that's a bit with pricing. We do a lot of analytics projects now. That's kind of grown over the last couple of years, I'd say. Mm. So something that's relatively new, and we can thank Dustin Huber for this, a break-even analysis. Mm-hmm. So that gets updated quarterly along with our along with our financials. We feed this financial data, and we can figure out how many miles do we have to run and at what rate to break even.
Oh, wow.
So that's one thing, is knowing your costs, knowing your revenue, and now we have a model for that that Dustin really really pioneered and built.
Yeah.
We do equipment analysis. Ryan just did a big project on this. Productivity studies. I know Dylan had one of those. So I'm trying to give a shout out to the other analysts and some of the big projects they've had. We're getting deep into Power BI. I know our data analytics team back in IT has done a wonderful job with you know, getting our data organized and making projects or making projects, making dashboards for the whole company and every department.
Yeah.
We're starting to do that a little bit for ourselves, either making our own data set or using what's already there to make our job easier.
Mm-hmm.
So we work in partnership with data analytics, but we're trying to dive in and get good with that skill set as well.
Yeah. Backing up, you said also, so you collaborate with sales, operations. So I thought that was interesting. And so part of this is you're looking at lanes and then you're agreeing, it's a mutual agreement between you and operations. Like you're checking with them to make sure this is a good fit.
Yeah. So folks who've listened to other terminal exchanges or dashboard radios will probably have heard the term, the three-legged stool. That's a term we use back there for sales, analytics, and operations. So our typical workflow is sales. Because of the relationship they've built, we get a bid document, whether through an email reach out or through a bid portal online. That comes to us. We get it imported. Mm-hmm. We get all the data organized and clean and put it into our software, SalesScope. And then from there, it moves to operations. And they actually go through and look at the lanes and mark operations interest in those lanes, rating it 1 through 3. 1, we really want it. 3, take it or leave it, or they don't mark it and they don't want it. But something that we'll do with operations is we'll actually go through and look as well, maybe ask them questions. And, you know, their primary responsibility is marking the lanes for interest. But we also play a little bit of a role in that.
Yeah.
Kind of everybody looks at the pricing when it's done. No pricing goes to the customer without it getting checked.
Yeah.
So we kind of check with operations as well. Sales does that. So everybody does a little bit of peeking at everyone else's homework.
Yeah.
We all have our area of expertise and area of ownership. But nothing's off limits.
Yeah.
And we work with operations directly, especially if we're trying to put together some sort of dedicated operation.
Yeah.
You know, okay, well, here's how the analytics look. Here's how the financials might look.
Yeah.
Okay, in theory, it looks great. Operations, what does this look like in practice? What sort of, you know, operational information do we need from the customer? You know, what questions do they have? Because they're going to have a different viewpoint than we will. Sales is going to be looking at things through the customer vantage point, like how can we satisfy the customer? Analytics is, what's the bottom line? How can I protect NewSpam?
Yep.
How can I make sure that we're not going to lose out on this financially? And operations, thinking about it from the driver perspective.
Yeah.
How are we going to make it work for the driver? So everyone kind of has their area of ownership, not just in the workflow process, but kind of who they're thinking about when they're doing their job. So kind of balancing those things out. Customer need versus driver need versus operational need, and then the bottom line.
Yeah.
So it's a balancing act. There's a good deal of conflict, but it's healthy conflict 99% of the time. And it really helps us. So one of the questions you alluded to is like, how do we not go bankrupt?
Yeah.
I think having all the stakeholders represented and represented well, and having everybody's voices heard, that's one important piece.
Yeah. It's like a giant spider web instead of Charlotte's web. This is Zach's web that is being weaved and everyone's pulling on different sides. The thing that I think is good that is very necessary for a company is to assess the value of what we're offering and giving the right rate for something. Because if you're selling goods, but they're way too high, then, you know, it's you're overvaluing yourself, or if you're undervaluing yourself, mm-hmm. and then you'll go eventually run out of goods to sell.
Right.
So, in our case, transportation.
Or you're not going to make any money on what you're selling, and you're going to drive yourself out of business.
Yeah.
Because you sold your service or your product right. for too cheap. You sold it below cost.
Right.
Which is what happens to a lot of these folks that go out of business.
Yeah. And I think you have to be really savvy to be aware of that. It's easy just to go with your gut mm-hmm. and think like, okay, I feel okay about this. But sometimes you have to look at the spreadsheets and the Power BI reports and see like, is this really going to cut it?
Yeah. Have some nerds in your corner. Right. Intuition's great. It's yeah. incredibly important.
Yeah.
But you want to have some data too.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool. So I very valuable part of what you're doing. So you said there's some analytic projects that you work mm-hmm. on, the break-even analysis. What else in the day of the life of a business analytics manager is there?
Well, Tyler Dietrich knows we submit a lot of IT tickets. We have a lot of requests. We're constantly looking to refine our workflow and our processes and try and make things as efficient as possible. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time in this program, Sales Scope. If we find an issue there or something that can be optimized, something that can save us or somebody else some time, we're going to push for that. And if we can't do it ourselves, we're going to reach out to the folks who can. Mm-hmm. So workflow optimization is something that we try to do. That sounds like a really fancy buzzword, but really it's we notice that there's an issue. What can we do to fix it?
Yeah.
That sort of a thing. Profitability checking on dedicated lanes. So we have just over 500 drivers, and we have 180 drivers who currently run dedicated operations. Mm. So every dedicated operation has a scenario, mm-hmm. Which is something that we have in Sales Scope. It's an application in there where we can take, you know, a stretch of time, a month, a quarter, a week, whatever, plug in the money that we made, the costs that we have, and just see. Get an estimate. Mm-hmm. How is this actually operating? Hmm. We can get a feel for it before the financials come out. Hmm. Then we try to, you know, correct based on what the financials actually read out. But mm-hmm. So we keep tabs on all of our dedicated pretty well that way. That's something that's a really big part of our workflow. We're working on turning that into touch points with our account managers. Mm-hmm. So we can collaborate and they can help us like, hey, here's how you can refine your process and mm-hmm. how you're checking on things. Okay, great. Well, here's what I'm seeing when I'm doing this scenario review. Here's some thoughts or some ideas how we can make this a little bit more efficient, how we can maybe add a little more revenue to the operation that you're in charge of. Hmm. So trying to develop that into a more collaborative process versus just, oh, I'm keeping score over here. I only reach out to you if something's not right. It's like, well, let's just touch base regularly. You can get your kudos as well as know when something seems to be going a little off the rails.
Yeah. So keeping track before something happens.
Right.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
And then you have that rapport built already. Yeah. And it's another touch point with operations.
Mm. Which is very good to stay grounded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't want to just be hiding over in the corner crunching numbers like this. Let's bring value to the team and then get some feedback ourselves.
Mm. Okay, this is really helping me get a better idea of the role and how it works. So a question I think that's interesting. Most jobs have some type of busy season, mm-hmm. or more or less. Our video producer, Daniel, he's had a very busy season with videos. He's been, you know, knocking these out of the park, ton of videos. Mm-hmm. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, for us, I'd say our busy season starts right now. I'm starting to feel a little bit of the pinch. I've got a couple big bids that I'm working on currently. One big one that's due towards the end of this week, another big one due next week. Mm-hmm. So October really is the start of our bid season. So a lot of our bigger customers have their bids now, starting Q4, going into the early part of Q1. Mm-hmm. So I think, I'm not sure how accurate this still is, but back in 2022, we figured that about 70% of our freight gets bid out in like a 4 or 5 month stretch.
Okay.
Between October and like February.
Wow, 70%. Yeah.
Don't quote
roughly.
Me on that. This,
roughly.
Very roughly. Things have changed over the last couple of years, but I'd say that's probably pretty close.
Yeah.
Well over half. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Between, you know, 2/3-ish.
Hmm.
It's It's a big chunk. So just about everybody's going to be pretty busy feeling the crunch at some point here in the next few months.
Yeah. That's really interesting to hear. So, and then something else that you do in your role is you're looking at a website called FreightWaves.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Correct.
And so if you want to elaborate a little bit on the trucking industry, there are times when things are going good and, you know, rates are good. There's not as many trucks on the road and there's a lot of freight to move. So we get good rates. But there are times when there's a lot of capacity and not as much freight. So if you could talk through these cycles and where are we at right now in the trucking industry, if you could give us a little snapshot, a little freight wave sneak peek, what does that look like?
Sure. So I think we're going to have a couple visuals for you here. So, Daniel, you don't have them right yet, but you'll have them when this gets released. There's a circle that shows the four different freight environments. So we've got it's a cyclical thing. And I think it was the former CEO of Knight-Swift who came up with this, or at least that's where we learned it from.
Yeah.
So you have four different freight cycles. You have endure, prepare to thrive, and prepare to endure. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how they broke it out. Right now, we're in endure. We've been or prepare to thrive. It's hard to tell which because the cycle's just so unlike anything else that anyone's experienced before. But essentially, if you're in endure, rates are either at the bottom or trending towards the bottom. They're going down. And you're prepared to thrive is like once you've hit the bottom. Like the market's not going to get any worse, not going to go any lower, theoretically. And
you're in the belly of the whale.
Yeah, and the market's prepared to swing up.
Yeah.
Right? And then once that swing kind of is fully in motion, you're in thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Thrive is shippers don't have the pricing power anymore. Carriers do. Shippers are they're having trouble getting compliance from their carriers, meaning carriers are rejecting loads to instead cover freight in the spot market because there's more demand for trucks than there are trucks available.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff that ends up on the spot market, the price gets inflated.
Mm-hmm.
So they say no to their contracted freight. So that forces shippers to then raise their rates or more goes to the spot market where it has to get a premium placed on it for someone to haul it. So then you have prices going higher and higher. That's your prepare to thrive and to thrive. And then prepare to endure is when kind of that the market finds equilibrium again and your spot rates start to fall. Once spot rates start to fall, you know, okay, we're getting ready for things to right size again and swing back in the shipper's favor.
Mm-hmm.
Is once spot rates start to fall, and then everyone wants their contract freight.
Mm-hmm.
And when everyone's scrambling for contracted freight, those rates can come down too. So usually your spot or brokered freight kind of leads your contract freight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you end up in endure, which is roughly where we find ourselves now. Things have been rough for, things started to turn in March of 22. We got our last rate increase in May of 22, and it's been downward pressure ever since.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a spiral. And you mentioned it's a unique time right now.
Yes.
In the transportation industry.
Yeah, so the reason for why that is, there's many, but COVID was just such a unique time and a unique situation. There's another visual that we can put up there. One of the things we track on FreightWaves, it's their site called Sonar. They have a lot of different market data where you can see tender rejections. And you'll notice in spring of 2020, their tender rejections crater. Well, they spike first because you had the toilet paper shortage. Everybody was rushing for everything. There was a mad dash. Quick,
right.
Get everything.
Get it out there.
Get it out there as soon as you can before we get shut down.
Yeah, hot loads.
Then everything gets shut down, and then everything tanks. And then things kind of don't really loosen up. Like we're not out of lockdown or whatever yet, but the market loosens up. Your back half of 2020, you get a pretty steep recovery. And we rode that out all through 2021 through the first quarter of 2022. Mm. And you'll see tender rejection rates on this visual. We'll show for 2020 through 2024. The line is high. You're seeing over 20% tender rejections. Now, what that means is out of every 100 loads, 20 of 100 are getting turned down by a carrier, where a normal market is between 5 and 7%.
Oh, wow.
So that translates to 93 to 95% contract compliance from carriers, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm a carrier, I'm accepting 95% of my primary committed freight. That's 5% tender rejections, right? So through 21 and the first part of 22, tender rejections were consistently above 20%, which is an incredibly hot market.
Yeah.
And since 2023, they've been consistently below 4%. So it's way below normal. So the shippers have a lot of power.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and what contributes to COVID being so crazy, not only the lockdowns, not only you had the crazy backups outside of the Port of LA where you had, I forget how many ships waiting for like a month at a time just to hit port. You had people stuck in their house. So what are they going to do? They can't go to the movies. They can't go on trips.
Yeah.
They bought stuff.
Right.
And the government handed out a bunch of money.
Right.
So they bought more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Consumer goods were way up. Yeah.
Way up. And there's charts for that too that tracks it. And then once the lockdowns ended and the free money stopped, people stopped buying goods and they kind of had revenge spending and I'm going to take all my vacations now. People made up for their 2 years of missed vacations by doubling down. So your services spending skyrocketed and your goods spending cratered. So hence your very sharp downturn in 22.
Yeah.
A lot of factors. And I think we're still trying to normalize.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a bit weird time. And I've heard people are holding on to iPhones longer than ever now because people aren't feeling the need to, I just got this phone. I don't need to get out. And so you're kind of holding on to stuff a little bit longer than you did. Consumer goods definitely shaped the way that is.
Well, with prices going up, inflation was crazy there for a while.
Yeah.
Prices are still high. It still feels high. Inflation slowed down, but prices aren't going down. So people are why would I spend money on, I'm going to hold on to my stuff that I can't hold on to for as long as possible. You got to buy your food.
Yep.
I don't have to buy a new iPhone. iPhone went up 20%. I'm not going to buy an iPhone now. This thing's going to be good for another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So some of the durable goods, the stuff that goes on trucks, right? There's no need to replace something that you can eke out for a while longer. And then new homes have slowed down because interest rates went up. People aren't selling their homes because they got interest rates in the twos. And it's why would I sell this house to get an interest rate in the sixes? So then people aren't buying stuff to go in those new houses. So there's just so many things.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors.
Yeah. The market changes and that can leave different people out to dry. It can leave the drivers out to dry. It can leave other companies out to dry that, people we're working with, our customers.
Oh, yeah.
So how can we maintain consistent rates? How can we be that steady company in highs and lows? What is the Nussbaum thought behind that? How do we perform well? How do we not go bankrupt?
Yes, you're almost looking for guiding principles for how we price freight. So there's no way to cycle proof your rates, unfortunately. But I think one thing, there's a few things we can do. First, being aware, having a knowledge of where are things at in the cycle. What's the broader economy look like? None of us can predict the future. There's an economist I like to follow. He's no one can predict the future, least of all economists. he goes on and gives his analysis. But having a broad understanding, what are the big picture signals of the economy? Is the economy flashing warning signs of recession? Is it showing good signs of growth? So kind of having a pulse on that, knowing what's going on in the freight environment, what's our trucking industry look like? And I think knowing what you're worth, you mentioned that, not over undervaluing yourself and what you have to offer.
Right.
So I think not undercutting ourselves.
Right. For sure.
But also developing relationships with shippers, you're more likely to maintain your current, like your incumbent lanes, mm-hmm. your current freight, if you have a relationship.
Mm.
So if you have a good relationship, if you have rapport built, if you've proven your service and proven mm-hmm. yourself, you're more likely to retain and maybe even grow mm-hmm. with the shipper. So relationships are important, and relationships also allow you to sell your value and sell yourself as an advisor. Like we've had some shippers say, hey, we have our own market analysis, but you're one of our key shipper or carrier partners. What do you see happening in the next 12 months in the trucking market?
Wow.
So we've actually had some of those discussions with some of our top shippers. We get to share our analysis of the market.
Yeah.
And we get to be a trusted advisor. And if we're not, you know, blowing smoke, like, oh, I think it's going to be up 10% in the first quarter, you better give us good rates. Like,
yeah.
We're going to be judged based on how other carriers react in their bid.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if we're telling them, oh, rates are going to be up huge, and then everyone else is pushing, like, accepting rate decreases, like, okay, well, Nussbaum's not reliable.
Yes, so I think
being true to your word.
It's huge.
Matters a lot, having integrity. I mean, it's one of our five principles here, right? So there's a lot that goes into it. But going back to the knowing what you're worth, I think being able to adequately and thoroughly explain to a customer, like, here's why we rated what we rated.
Mm.
Here's how we got there.
Yeah.
Here's our methodology. Like, we didn't just pull it out of thin air. Yes, yeah. I know we're more expensive than most, but here's why. And if you have history on a lane, like, well, do the other carriers who've bid this cheaper than us, they understand X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
Like, we've got insider info on certain lanes.
Yeah.
So we can kind of share that and utilize that, not use it to our advantage, but use it as like justification. Like, here's how we can justify our rates.
Yeah.
So it's not just, well, here's the market, slap a number on it, but trying to gather as much context as possible and tell a story.
Yeah.
A compelling story.
A compelling story. And we have those things we can look at to see specifically what is the data. So fuel cost, or I don't know what type of things you're looking at for, how our expenses are and that type of thing, but yeah.
Yeah, one thing that I appreciate about working at Nussbaum is the level of transparency with our financials.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a quarterly financial meeting where we go over, there's the quarter review, here's our updated annual projections, open forum to ask questions. There's a monthly meeting. I think a dozen people can get into it to get a more in-depth, you know, look at the financials. It's an hour-long meeting with just a dozen people in a room and some accounting folks. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, having clear line of sight into our own financials, and SalesScope, the tool that I've brought up a couple times that we use with all of our bidding, we can see, okay, how have we rated other lanes that are similar to this? If it's a lane we've run before, how has it performed historically? We can plug things into a scenario and see, like, well, here's what we can expect our return on our assets utilized to be. So we're not shooting in the dark. We can go in with eyes wide open.
Yeah.
In most cases, at least to the best of our ability, right? There's some things, some curveballs that get thrown at you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this customer really doesn't like to unload their trailers in a timely manner. So all of a sudden we have 20 trailers sitting someplace where we expected there to be five, and that adds a cost. Knowing your cost is a really big deal.
Yeah. From the driver perspective, I come to work for Nussbaum and I'm worried about job security. How do I know that I will have a job?
Sure. Everyone wants security, right? And I'll tell you this, speaking of job security, I started in 2019. And we took a pretty big hit from one of our key customers at the tail end of 2019. That kind of shook us up a little bit. And then COVID happened. And I had been in the trucking industry for 6 months. And I was like, man, did I make a terrible mistake? What's going on? But I remember sitting in a meeting, and Brent Nussbaum was like very calming presence. Like, we're going to ride the ship. We're going to ride this out. Nobody's going to lose their job. Nobody's taking a pay cut. If we're going to cut some programs, like, but we're not, no one's losing their job. And he's like, if anyone takes a pay cut, the executives will take it first. So kind of like step in the gap. This is scary. This is hard, but we're going to get through it. Nobody lost their job. And as far as speaking directly to the drivers, we didn't slash driver count. You know, we just didn't hire to replace people who decided to leave or who had to get let go. So like nobody got fired through a big customer hit followed up by COVID. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the most stressful time for me as far as wondering about job security. Yeah. And probably one of the most stressful times for this company because mm-hmm. there's so much unknown. No drivers lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. And we've been in a down market for over 2 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's lost their job because of it. Mm. In fact, our driver count's gone up.
Yeah.
And we're still performing well. So I can't guarantee anything. I'm not in charge of hiring. I'm not in charge of anything. I'm a business analytics manager. I don't manage any people. I manage the business analytics. Yeah. That's it. No guarantees, but mm-hmm. I share that as context. Like if you do right by the company will do right by you.
Mm.
Right? Like, there's people here, though. We're going to make mm-hmm. mistakes. You're going to get rubbed the wrong way. Something mm-hmm. is going to tick you off. It's probably going to happen at some point if it hasn't happened already, mm-hmm. right? We're all imperfect people.
Yeah.
But we're all doing our best. And I think everybody here does the best that they can to live up to the values that the company tries to represent.
Mm-hmm.
And through some really challenging times, I didn't see anybody get fired
mm-hmm.
for job cutting.
So. Yeah. It's very impressive. And we're very savvy. It sounds like our pricing analytics department is very savvy.
I don't want to brag.
You
said it, not me.
But that is, it does give us awareness for yep. what's going on. And, you know, is it time to prepare to thrive? Like, do we change how many drivers we're hiring? Mm-hmm. Does it change how much equipment do we have on mm-hmm. hand? So I feel like we're savvy. And the part that you said about CEO being willing to, you know, the executives to take a pay cut mm-hmm. before other people did. I mean, that's a very significant thing to mention also.
Yeah. So. It feels like we have a very selfless, you know, leadership crew.
Yeah.
That's the impression I've had for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So our analytics team, we're focused on understanding our costs, being experts on what we have going on mm-hmm. internally. And we're trying to be experts on what's going on externally. Like, what are the factors we can't control, but mm-hmm. we can at least monitor?
Yeah.
Because it influences what we have going on. And then what can we tighten up internally?
Mm.
So, right. So you're looking out and you're looking in.
Mm.
That's what we can do.
Yeah.
And if we master that and are constantly getting better.
Yeah.
Then we're equipping our sales team to be excellent when they're in front of the customer, at mm-hmm. least with what we can equip them with.
Yeah.
We're equipping our operations team with the best freight that we can,
mm-hmm.
which will hopefully be better for our drivers as well.
Yeah.
And ultimately, my job description, better for the bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes me think of the Alden quote
mm-hmm.
in the meeting room, if you take care of your people, the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah.
So.
And empowered people too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that I've felt for most of my time here, is empowered to make the best decision that I can in a given situation or scenario, and to pursue what I think I do best
mm-hmm.
and use that for the benefit of the company. Mm.
Yes. Yeah.
So
definitely.
You're sitting in your seat, right? Because you've got something to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring out these fun conversations, and that can be a benefit to those who are listening,
mm-hmm.
who maybe have learned something that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah.
That could drive engagement. Mm-hmm. And again, then you're empowering somebody. Like, oh, I didn't realize that the nerds in the corner actually did work. This is great. Like, and now yeah. I have a little bit more confidence in what we're doing, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
There's value add, and I think you can develop a virtuous cycle. I think no matter what seat we're in,
yeah,
we have the ability to add to that.
Yeah, to encourage, to empower people. Mm-hmm. That is good. I did write this down. Why would you haul freight with Nussbaum instead of somewhere else?
Why not? Come on. That's not my best answer.
They got a bunch of nerds in the cubicle in the back. No,
I mean, we're not even wearing glasses. How nerdy are they? I mean, one of the things that sets us apart, I believe, is our commitment to service and quality.
Mm-hmm.
That is our niche. Mm-hmm. That's what we go after. What's the freight that's difficult that you have a hard time servicing? We had one customer that's one of our top 10 customers now. Their freight was, to be blunt, it was incredibly frustrating for our operations team to handle.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to change the structure by which that's handled operationally
mm-hmm.
And now it's almost set it and forget it. We have one person in charge of a team of drivers who just handle it. And this customer had a 65, it was in the 60s. I don't know if 65 is probably not the exact number, but in the 60% of on-time delivery. And with us, it's in the 90s.
Wow.
So I think that's one thing we can pride ourselves on is service. I think creative solutions, that's one thing our operations and analytics teams, and sales too. Like the three-legged stool is, it's a powerful stool.
Can hold a lot.
It holds a lot of weight. It's very creative. But like coming up with creative solutions for shippers, like they give us their freight and we're like, hey, have you thought about running it like this? No, we haven't. Tell us more. Like we've had that happen a handful of times. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we just get no response or shut down or whatever. But other times it's really impressed the folks who we're working with, which is excellent. That's across the board. That's not me tooting my own horn. That I've seen it with the other analysts and with our operations folks who are part of that process. Mm-hmm. And I've heard this too, and it really stuck with me, is we fail better than anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Like if we're not going to make a delivery or pick up on time, like, well, let's communicate. Let's not try and hide it or like cross our fingers and hope we get there somehow and then leave the office and leave it for somebody else. Like, no, okay, I think our driver's going to be late. But we're working on potential solutions to, you know, get it there on time.
Yeah.
Or there's no chance. What can we do? But I want to let you know as soon as possible.
Yeah.
You know, like, so fail better than anybody else.
I like that. Failing well. Yeah.
Right. Don't fail and be sheepish and don't, like, own it. It's like, okay, we might have been able to do something better. Or, hey, we had no, it's just, sorry, it fell through.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be, if you're upfront, if you're honest, even if you're failing, that can still make a positive impression if you do it right.
Yeah. You know, that is also a thing that makes a difference. Our drivers, a phrase we use around Nussbaum is own it.
Mm-hmm.
Just remind each other to own it. That means the good things and the bad things when we do something wrong. And it's a reminder to me that I'm far from perfect. Mm-hmm. Make a lot of mistakes, and just to own it, and that is good.
Well, and you mentioned the drivers. Like, I can't believe I didn't mention our drivers in that. You think about the industry. It's hard, you know, talk about treating people well.
Yeah.
Industry turnover can range between 70% and 90% as an average, as far as like drivers, and that means that if you're a 100 truck company, you have to hire 70 or 90 drivers every year because you're turning over like that many people are leaving. Nussbaum, we're in the mid-30s, right? So our drivers, like, we have so many folks who are engaged. Mm. We have so many drivers who want to be here and are just professional and want to be successful themselves and want the company to do well and represent Nussbaum well.
Yeah.
And that is huge because I'm a nerd in the corner. Most people in the office don't see me.
Sure.
You know, the operations folks who are loading and unloading our trailers definitely don't see me. They see our drivers.
Yeah.
Like, so if there's a face that folks who give feedback, like, right, the procurement people who are running these bids, who are they seeking feedback from? It's from the operations folks who our drivers interact with.
Mm-hmm.
We've had drivers leave such good impressions on the operation folks who they interact with that's trickled back to our sales and analytics folks.
Hmm.
Like, it's won us business because our drivers do such an excellent job
servicing
the customer.
Yeah, like stories of someone leaving Nussbaum and then realizing that they missed the service and then coming back because it's like the way our drivers carried themselves and delivered the loads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a full, Yeah, it's a package deal. I mean, between the drivers and our operations team and anybody who has customer contact, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming from the guy who never talks to the customer.
So last question before we land this plane is, what gives you purpose in life? Our motto is being purpose-driven.
Yeah.
So I like to ask this question, is just to explore purpose and the why, the behind. We do things, why are we doing it? So what about you?
I'm about to get real introspective again. I think for me, it's having someone else to live for aside from myself. So I think about my time in college. Like when I moved out by myself, I played a lot of video games. I did not do much for anybody other than me. Mm-hmm. Played video games, skipped class. I just was not very aware of anything outside of my four walls. Mm-hmm. Having a relationship with God, developing that mm-hmm. in college really helped. But like when Alyssa and I got married, my prospects professionally were like, it was bad. I went to ISU to become an English teacher. My GPA was too low to remain in the teaching track, but I only had two semesters left of credits to get before I could graduate with an English studies degree. I'm like, well, let's just get out of here. This is falling apart. I need to get the degree and then try and figure something out. And then I was like an intern for my church for a year. Mm-hmm. And then I drove a truck for Frito-Lay for a year or for a nonprofit for 3 years. Like my professional skill set was mm-hmm. not strong. So I don't know why she said yes. I must have had a great personality, I guess. But having Alyssa in my life and then my kids, Isaac and then Owen and now Ava, mm-hmm. Like having someone to provide for, having someone who depends on me, like I need to show up. I can't just roll out of bed and do what I want all mm-hmm. day. Like that doesn't lead you anywhere you actually want to go. Mm-hmm. That leaves you stuck. Mm-hmm. But if you have people who need you, who love you, and who you love, I don't know what else could be more motivating than that. Mm-hmm. Just having them in my life pushes me to be more and to just push myself out of my comfort zone to do more here so I can provide more for them at home. And to make myself uncomfortable at home because kids are growing up. They're learning new stuff all the time. Like, all right, Dad, you got to get out of your comfort zone and like meet your kids where they're at.
Yeah.
At each new stage. I think having responsibility is a big deal, but having someone else to live for. Mm-hmm. Like, my life isn't mine anymore. Mm-hmm. It belongs to those four.
Yeah. Yeah, boundaries being pushed a lot. Mm-hmm. Comfortable levels are getting pushed.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah,
especially when everybody's sick at once and a baby's been crying most of the night and you're like, you know what? I'll sleep later.
Yeah.
They need me now.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes I respond poorly and have to apologize, but
there's not always that joy there. But in your heart, you know, this is something that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And that gives you joy to work through it. So. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So rapid round, hot takes here at the end. We do this game called Hot Takes.
Okay.
So I ask a question, very controversial, and you will either agree or disagree with this hot take. All right?
Okay. I have not read these. I'm not going to read them now. I just saw them noted. I'm not going to look at them.
All right. First one, wordy emails are the best.
I feel like this is very personal. Depends on context. Can I say that? Can I say it depends on context?
You can say whatever you want to say.
I don't know because you're impartial. You haven't said anything yet. You need a microphone over there. No. Well, forget Daniel. Oh, okay. I'm going to say it depends on the context. Mm-hmm. What are you saying in your wordy email?
Yeah. What's
it about? This is a pot shot at me, by the way.
So you used to work in a marketing type role, email marketing. Correct.
Yeah. I did that for about 3 years for a non-for-profit email marketing, did some web page development.
And so Zach has some very famous emails that have gone out around Nussbaum.
World famous
emails. And they're very, very wordy with great humor, great wit.
Sometimes they don't say much. A lot of words, not a lot of content.
I think that's kind of the point.
Okay. Probably to the point. If you're in operations, you want to be to the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to support wordy emails.
If they're clever and witty, you have my full support. Absolutely.
That's a good one. All right, next one is a food-related hot take.
Sweet.
Waffle fries are better than regular fries.
Yes. Are you talking like just straight fries?
Yeah, just straight fries.
Like not crinkle cut?
No, just normal fries.
Waffle's better than that. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I think a Chick-fil-A fries. I think anything with a little bit of texture because it catches more salt.
Oh, interesting.
That's one of my reasons.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. I could see that. Hot take, literal hot take here. Hot dogs are better than burgers.
No, that's false. Now, if you want to talk brats versus burgers, I think you have a debate.
Okay.
If you're hot dogs versus burgers, like, I don't know. I'm thinking, like, you got an Oscar Mayer whatever versus, I don't know, man. Cheeseburger's just so good.
Yeah. You say grilling out bonfire, though. I'm thinking hot dogs.
You have a weenie roast.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true. And you have some s'mores, too.
Yeah, some s'mores. So maybe a little bit easier to cook than a burger? A little bit more easier to transport?
Okay, yeah. Easier to cook, yes. If we're talking, I took it as quality. You said better.
Better. It's whatever way you interpret better.
Now, if you're talking better over a campfire, you know, it depends. What equipment do you have? Do I have, like, one of those... Do I have something to put over the fire? Because I can grill a burger.
Okay.
Pretty easy.
Sure. In this scenario, you can.
Yeah, I'm going to do burgers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Burgers any day.
Yeah, I'd rather have my ground beef, ground chuck patty versus whatever they put in hot dogs.
Yeah.
I do love hot dogs. That was one of my staple foods growing up. But
yeah.
I'm going to go burger every time.
Okay. Burger boy.
That's right. Burger man.
Burger man.
It doesn't have the alliteration, but please.
Please. I'm a burger man. I like that one just because we're end of summer.
Yeah.
Fall time, grilling out, wiener roast. So thank you for being on the podcast today.
Of course.
Really appreciate it. Your expertise are huge. What makes this company run, amongst other people too.
You're too kind.
Thank you to everyone listening, whoever you are. I really appreciate you. And until next time, stay purpose-driven and own it every moment.
Hi, this is Lisa from Recruiting at NewsBomb, and I'd love to answer any questions you have about driving with us. Give us a call at 309-268-1199 or visit NewsBombJobs.com. Talk to you soon. You've been listening to Terminal Exchange, the official podcast of Nussbaum Transportation. If you're enjoying our content, please leave us a review. Your reviews help us spread the word about these important topics and invite more people into conversation. You can rate and review us on your podcast app or visit us online at terminalexchange.org. New episodes arrive every other Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow Nussbaum on your favorite social media platforms and be the first to know when new episodes are released. Thanks for listening. Until next time, own every moment and stay purpose-driven.